Ranney, Harris, and the other NCOs hoped that the platoon leaders would bring the problem to Colonel Sink, or that Sink would become aware of the situation on his own, and that Sink would then quietly remove Sobel. But that seemed naive. How could young officers, whose responsibility was to back up their CO, go to the colonel to complain about the CO? And what would they complain about? Company E continued to lead the way in the regiment, in the field, in barracks, in athletic contests. How could the NCOs expect Colonel Sink to do other than support his company commander in the face of dissension and pressure from a group of sergeants and corporals? These guys were getting ready to go into combat against the most feared army in the world, not to play a game or have a debate. So the mumble-mumble continued, and Sobel and First Sergeant Evans remained isolated but still very much in command. Weekend passes and the excellent British rail service gave the men a break from the tension. England in the late fall and early winter of 1943 was a wonderland for the boys from the States. Most of the British boys their age were off in Italy or in training camps far from their homes. So there were lonely, bored, unattached young women everywhere. The American soldiers were well paid, much better than the British, and the paratroopers had that extra $50 per month. Beer was cheap and plentiful. Once out of Altborn, all restraints were removed. They were getting ready to kill or be killed. They were, for the most part, 20 or 21 years old. Webster described the result in an October 23rd diary entry. "Although I do not enjoy the army, most of the men in this outfit find it a vacation. Boys who had been working steadily at home enter the army and are relieved of all responsibilities. It is unanimously agreed that they never pitched such glorious drunks back home." The excitement of the time, the kaleidoscope of impressions that were continually thrust upon them, the desperate need to escape the rigors of training, the thought of upcoming combat and Sobel's chicken shit combined to make this an unforgettable time and impel most of the men to make the most of it. "London, to me, was a magic carpet," Carson wrote. "Walk down any of its streets, and every uniform of the free world was to be seen. Their youth and vigor vibrated in every park and pub. To Piccadilly, Hyde Park, Leicester Square, Trafalgar Square, Victoria, they came. The uniforms of the Canadians, South Africans, Australians, New Zealanders, the Free French, Polish, Belgium, Holland, and of course the English and Americans were everywhere.